remember. In other words, there's a certain point where God will get involved because of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, because of his agreement. Okay? At that point, God will get involved, and that means that he will get involved personally, and that means God's personal supervision over Israel. And you see that it's clear that it means that, because the next verse is Moses was grazing the sheep of Israel when he came to the burning bush. So you see that, you see clearly that Vayeda, meaning God knew, mean that God got involved. Okay? The question is, what did the nation of Israel do that they don't deserve to be helped? Okay? The first thing you see is that the two Jews were fighting. It means it represents the idea that the nation wasn't united. If you've got to fight against an enemy, that's one thing, you've got to be united. If you're not united, then there's conflict from within that definitely weakens the nation. It definitely weakens the nation. Okay? And the second thing is Moshe put his life on the line by killing the Egyptian. He could get in a lot of trouble. In fact, he had to run away because of it. And then he tries to straighten them out about not fighting, that they must stick together if they're going to fight to get out of this type of slavery. They're going to have to stick together and not fight. So when he says that they turn on him, which means that they do not want to change, okay, and they're going to stay in that mode. So he says once they don't want to change, so therefore that is the therefore he says they don't deserve to be saved. Okay. In fact, the Abarbanel says that the one of the metaphors of the burning bush is that God is telling Moshe that even though the nation of Israel is being consumed by its enemy, and according to the laws of nature, they should be destroyed. In other words, Moshe's analysis of the situation was correct. He's telling him, you're correct. But he's saying that, but however, the nation of Israel is under a different system. It's under a different system. That system is God's personal supervision, you see. So you see that they really didn't deserve to be saved. But however, but because of his agreement, God's agreement with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, so therefore he saved them for them, for the forefathers. The question is, what about other nations that do not have the agreement with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob? Then in what way does God, how could God relate to them? I mean, if they're not on the level to be God personally to relate to them. In other words, first of all, I'd like to say is that, I mean, God, if a non-Jew reaches a level of where God will that God would relate to him, then God would definitely relate to him. The personal relationship with God is dependent totally on your level. Okay? It's only as a nation that we need Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Okay? It's not the... So in other words, another nation... Even if they're in such a situation, then God would let them be destroyed. God would not intervene. They do not deserve it. If they do deserve help, then God would intervene. If they don't deserve help, then God would not intervene. Okay? Except by Judaism. Except by them, by the Jews, they have the merit of their forefathers. Okay? But there's also one other point, and that is this. God assures us that prayer helps. Okay? There is a special hashkacha, special personal supervision that God relates to prayer. Okay? And even though you might not be on the level for God to relate to you personally, God does listen to your prayers. He's aware that you're praying. How he makes decisions when to listen and when not to listen, I don't know. But however, definitely God hears your prayers. Well, of course, like we said, God knows everything. By hear, we mean God knows everything. God knows what you're doing. But however, and there is a special hashkacha, special personal supervision by God, that he will listen to your prayers. Okay? And that's by Jew and non-Jew. Okay, we're in Exodus 3, verse 2. The Rashi says, from within the bush. The Rashi says, there wasn't any other tree besides this snare, because God says, I am with him, him meaning the nation of Israel, Bitzara, in trouble. There are a few problems in the Rashi. First of all, he says that it had to be a snare. A snare happens to be a thorn bush. Okay? He says that God had to appear to Moshe in the thorn bush. Okay? And the reason is, he says, we have to understand why the thorn bush. Now, he gives the reason, and he says, because I am with the nation of Israel in their troubles. Okay? Now, what does one thing have to do with the other? You understand? Okay? So the question is, and what is one thing, and where do you see in this whole story that God is with Israel in their troubles? The thorn bush represents the Jews that were in trouble, because the thorn bush hurts, like somebody said, that it hurts, okay, that it causes harm, meaning that the thorn bush represents Israel. And the flame, it represents God. And God is in the flame, right? And he's connected to the thorn bush, and the bush doesn't get consumed, right? So he says, God is with you in your troubles, which means that he will never let you be consumed. Okay? That is the, according to Rashi, that is the metaphor, that is the vision. When Moshe had his vision, he had it through the thorn bush, because it represented that God was telling Moshe that God is always with the nation of Israel, and they could never be totally, that in all their troubles, even during the time of trouble, God is with them. Okay? The purpose of the bush was to get across a certain idea to Moshe. It was part of the prophecy. The burning bush was a miracle, right? So it was part of the prophecy that he should get certain information that God is always with Israel. Even though they're being tormented and tortured in the worst possible ways, don't think that God is not there. Okay? God is, by being there means that God is aware of what's happening, and that it's part of God's plan, and he's going to deal with it when the right time comes. Okay? Now, the question is, according to Rashi, why is God telling Moshe this information and this at this time? Okay? What is the message that God is trying to get across to Moshe? When a person is in a terrible situation, if he feels that nobody is behind him, that he's all alone, and that there's no purpose in why he's there, then he's totally lost. Person has to have, in the worst situation to operate, he must have some type of hope. If a person doesn't have hope, then all is lost. Then he can't deal with it. Okay? What God is saying, when the Jews, no matter what the catastrophe is, how bad the catastrophe is, they should always know that they're always part of God's plan. Even this, God is with them, and they're part of God's plan. That would give them the courage and the reason for existing, even in the worst situation. Because if you are operating in the worst situation, then a person feels there's no hope and there's no purpose. He's just like the result of bad situation, you see, then there's no hope, he gives up. He gives up, there's no fight. For a person to continue, there has to be a reason that forces him to continue in the worst situation. And the reason that a Jew should continue in the worst situation, because he has to know that God is always with the nation of Israel. Even in their worst situations, it's part of God's plan, and therefore, and God is aware of what is happening, and there's purpose in it, and just you must accept God's will and continue on the best that you can in the worst situation. Okay, we're in chapter 3, verse 11, and it says that Moshe said to God, "Who am I that I should go to Paro?" And Rashi says, "How am I significant to speak to kings?" Okay, to speak with kings. That is the statement of the Chumash and the Rashi. There are two questions that we have to answer. One question is, he was raised by kings, so therefore he shouldn't have had to speak to kings. And two, God is sending him. I mean, you know what I mean? In other words, the way Joey phrased it is that he could speak to God, and he doesn't ask, "Who am I to speak to God?" But yet he asks, "Who am I to speak to kings?" I mean, that sounds a little ridiculous, right? He's right. Good question. On the question that we just asked, that after you speak to God, you should ask, "Who am I to speak to God?" Not, "Who am I to speak to Paro?" Okay? Now, what Chaim is asking, he's asking that God is like abstract, and it might be more real to him when he's in front of a king and all his ministers are there, all the people in the government, so that sounds more scary. Okay, that's Chaim's question. Right. The answer is like this. The first step that a person, when a person comes into this world, the physical world is the only reality that he sees. Okay? And that is real to him, the physical reality. In development of ideas, then ideas become just as real as the physical reality. He extends this sense of reality from the physical, he extends it into the world of ideas. And that becomes real to him. The causes, the reasons for the existence of the physical world not only become equally real, it could become more real than the physical. You see? How much more so when you get prophecy and you're dealing with the idea of God, that when you're a prophet, the physical world has less meaning and the world of ideas has more meaning to you, especially when you relate to God, so the idea of God becomes more real to you. So therefore, definitely Moshe would not have any fears of Paro, you see? So the question is, so what was he afraid of? What was he asking? Who am I to come before Paro? That becomes the question. Right. The answer is that when you're sent on a mission from God, there are two types of missions. Okay? One mission is that I have to do the best that I can. I'm under the laws of nature, and I must do God's mission under the laws of nature. The other thing is I'm under God's personal hashgacha, that God's personal supervision, and God is going to relate to me personally. Okay? So therefore, at this point, Moshe thinks that he has to relate to the people personally. That is one possibility that Moshe is asking. Okay? Could I come to them? On my own, I mean, the question is why did Moshe assume that he's on the low, that his mission was on the lower level?
Maybe his mission is on the higher level. We always assume that we're in the laws of nature unless we have a proof that God's supervision is working there. What? I always assume, like by Yaakov, when he came in with Esau, he prepared for war. He sent him a present, he prepared for war. Then he prayed to God. That's how a person must operate. But if I'm going, that God is, I'm under God's supervision, and I know that for sure, then I operate totally differently. Then I operate that God is going to protect me, I'm not afraid of doing anything. You see? That's one possibility. In other words, the question is, isn't it obvious that he should be under God's supervision if God is speaking to him? The answer is no. When God speaks to you, he's sending you on a mission, you have to know exactly how much you are responsible for the mission and how much you're supposed to rely on God. That's what we learned from this discussion. This answer, what I'm saying, is Rashi gives that answer in verse 12, which we will do when we get to verse 12. Okay? Because Rashi says, Moshe said, who am I that I should go to Paro? And God says, it is not your mission, but it's my mission. And therefore I will be with you. In other words, you don't have to worry, but I will take over. That's what Rashi is answering, which we'll get to when we get to verse 12. There was a question that was asked just now by Chaim of how do you know how much Moshe knew about God when God spoke to him? Okay? And we answered that that the idea of justice, and we see that he had the idea of justice, is bound up with God. Okay? I'd like to explain that answer and clarify that answer, and also clarify the difference behind idolatry, because he was raised in Paro's home, which was an idolatrous house, so to explain the difference between idolatry and relating to God. Okay? There are two ways that we come about. Either we're created or we're a chance being. Okay? If we are a chance being, with just the chance that we're here, then there is no meaning to my existence. I'm just a chance. I'm no different than a termite or a tree or an inanimate object. I'm no different. It's just a chance that I came out this way. So therefore, there cannot be, insofar philosophically, there cannot be any idea of murder. Only insofar as I'm afraid that I need to live in a civilization. So insofar as civilization, so practically, I will have practically that you shouldn't murder, just so we could get along together, so I don't have to worry about just every person has to protect himself against his neighbor. But philosophically, there is no such thing as murder, because if I murder you, there's nothing wrong with it philosophically, because there's no purpose to your existence, so what's the difference if I kill you? But, so therefore, the only way that life could have meaning, and the idea of justice is essential to my life, that I must live the life of justice, only if I know there's a God. If I know there's a God, then I know there's purpose. If there is purpose, then when I should kill you or when I shouldn't kill you must be dependent on what God somehow, either before Torah, then how I investigate the laws of justice philosophically, or after Torah, then I just follow Torah, what Torah tells me the laws of justice are. Okay? So, therefore, the fact that Moshe had justice, so you see that he knew that there had to be a creator. Okay? Alright. And also, there's one other thing, the difference between idolatry and the knowledge of God. Okay? Idolatry, the idea of idolatry, is based on the ego that I am self-centered. Okay? And I'll show you why. Because since idolatry by definition means that it's not true, this idea of this God is not true, the question is, where did it come from? It comes from my creation. In other words, in my mind, I am creating something that is unbelievable and that's going to protect me. In other words, the physical world is very frightening, and since it's very frightening, I'm afraid of the physical world, so I create a being to protect me. So, first of all, the being is created from my ego. How I look at the world, that's how I'm going to create this being. If I look at the world as terrible, or this authority, I could look at God as a devil. Or I could look at God as a very nice and loving God and forgives me whatever I do. You see? So I create the God based on my ego. So that in itself is self-centered. Right? And the purpose of this creation is to protect me. You see? So therefore, it's totally self-centered and raises the level of ego of that I am the center of, I created a God, and I am the center of this God's universe. And therefore, he's going to protect me. Whatever I do is right. You see? So it's very self-centered. But where you're basing a God based on reality, you must study the universe. And through the understanding of the universe, you find that there's a being that's so beyond the physical world that King David in his Psalms asked the question, what is man that God should even think of him, that he should create him? And King David can't answer the question. There is no answer to the question. The answer lies in the nature of God, which we cannot know. So therefore, the study of Torah and the search for the truth of the real God leads to humility, the opposite of idolatry. Idolatry leads to a self-centeredness, that it's all around me, while the truth leads to humility. You see? So therefore, and you cannot have prophecy unless you have humility, and you must know God to get prophecy, and you must have humility. You see? Moshe definitely had both. You see? So therefore, when you ask the question, how do I know, you know, what Moshe knew at the time that he got prophecy, it's a misunderstanding of what a prophet is. A prophet must know God in reality. And knowing God in reality must mean I know justice, I have the ideas of justice, I have the idea of humility, I recognize that I'm just a small speck in the universe, and when in the knowledge of God I'm equal to nothing, like Moshe said, that you realize, or like King David voiced it, like why should I can't even understand why God should bother with me. While in idolatry, well, of course God should bother with me. I'm the center of his whole universe. That's what I created him for. I mean, it's unconscious that you created him, but that's the way it comes about. You created him that he should deal with you directly and nobody else. So therefore it leads to egocentricity that you're the center of the universe. The question is, since we're supposed to think of God as a personal God, shouldn't we also have that egocentricity the same way as other nations? Okay? The answer is that when we talk about a personal God, it's a system that works differently than the laws of nature. There are two systems. One system is the laws of nature. Okay? One system is based on good and evil. It depends. If I'm good, then God relates to me in one way. If I'm evil, God relates to me in another way. So it's based on a system. That system of good and evil, when you understand how the system works, you will also learn humility from the system of good and evil. By a personal God, we mean that God relates to you a different system that relates to your level of relationship to God. In other words, there's a direct ratio between your relationship to God to God's relationship to you. Again, the proof that he had justice, that Moshe had justice, was that he killed the Egyptian to protect the Jews, right? He saw that was just. And then secondly, we see that he had humility because God came to him in a vision. And if you have the ego, if you have that ego, then God will not relate to you. If you're self-centered, God will not relate to you. So we see that he had that humility. We are doing chapter 3, verse 11, and we're doing the second Rashi, where the verse says that, and that I should take him out. In other words, why should I take him out? Rashi explains that Moshe is asking a question, and the question is, why is Israel worthy that a miracle should happen to them and you should take them out of Egypt? Okay? And the question is, God is telling him that you should take them out. And he's questioning why. You understand? And we know they're being tortured and tormented by the Egyptians. So isn't that good enough? Okay? That is the question that we have to understand in Rashi. Right. The answer is that when God relates to us, God relates to us in our framework, not in God's framework. Okay? Once again, God relates to us in our framework, not in his framework. If he related to us in his framework, we wouldn't be able to exist. Okay? So he has to relate to us in our framework. If when he relates to us in our framework, then we should be able to understand the benefit and the reason why God does things. And according to Rashi, we see that we have an obligation to understand, and if God tells us something contradictory to my understanding, I have an obligation to do an analysis to see why my way is wrong. Now, since Moshe is a prophet and he's speaking directly with God, so when God says you should take them out, he says, according to my understanding, their lifestyle doesn't deserve that they should be saved. Just being tortured is not a reason to save people. There must be that they have something inherent in them that they can be saved. And that we saw, we spoke about, when he saw that when he killed the Egyptians, the Jews themselves turned on him and says, what are you going to do, kill us like you killed the Egyptian? Which means that they turned against the person that was out to help him and put his life on the line. A person that doesn't want to be helped, you don't have to help. You can only help a people that wants to be helped. It's the same thing with the students. You cannot help somebody that doesn't want to be helped. Your obligation and responsibility is to a person that wants to be helped, and you work with the person. Okay? So therefore, Moshe says, why do they deserve to be saved? Okay? That is Moshe's question. And the question is that these people were slaves for like 200 years, why shouldn't we understand that they had a slave mentality and they couldn't think straight and they didn't have the ability to think correctly because they had this slave mentality? So why shouldn't that be an excuse for them and that you should still save them from the terrible suffering that they're in? That is the question. The answer is that repentance, in other words, repentance meaning changing my life, and to live the correct life must be that to live the correct life, I must have the ability to see what is good for me and what is not good for me. If I don't have the ability to see what's good for me, in other words, I don't understand. Let's say I go over to a person that's on drugs and I say, this is going to destroy you. And the person says, yeah, but I'm enjoying myself. He can't see the harm in it. He doesn't see that he's destroying himself. Then he can't do tshuva. Why should he change? He doesn't see the harm. If a people have reached such a level of lowliness that they can't see that which is beneficial for them, then they've reached a point where they can't do tshuva. And since they cannot repent, so then even God will not save them. And they must be on the point, they must be on the level where they have the ability of free will where they could change. They cannot change, then there is no hope for them. If there's no hope, then they deserve to be slaves because they are in that situation and they can't be helped. The question is that sometimes a person in a certain moment, like a moment of anger, he'll act incorrectly and will not be able to listen to somebody's advice or ideas, but when he calms down, he will be able to listen and in that way change his ways and repent. In other words, in a very strong moment of passion, could be anger or pleasure or whatever the passion is, he can't think straight, but when that moment passes, then he's able to operate correctly. So therefore, maybe these people under this moment, they didn't listen to Moshe, but maybe under different circumstances, Moshe would have been able to explain the correct way, and they would have been able to be guided. The answer is that the person that is giving the advice has to make a determination whether it's a situational thing or whether it's a permanent thing. If you're right, if it's a situational thing, then you should wait till the situation passes and then try to help the person out. But if it's not a situational thing, but it's so impaired, he's so impaired his thinking that no matter what the situation, he cannot talk to him, then you can't give him help, so then there's no hope for them, then you should not help them. And Moshe Rabbeinu's evaluation of the people of Egypt was that they were impaired, inherently impaired, and it wasn't just situationally impaired. And therefore they did not deserve to be saved because they couldn't be helped. They can't be helped, so therefore they don't deserve to be saved. And we will see from the answer in the next verse that God doesn't disagree with this assessment. Moshe's assessment was correct. The question is, does Moshe have the right to question God, or in a sense argue with God, because he's saying, no, they shouldn't be saved, and God is saying they should be saved, so he's arguing with God. Does he have the right to argue with God? Okay? We see by Abraham that there were two times. One time God said that he was going to destroy Sodom, and Abraham argues with God. And then God tells him, go slaughter your child without a peep, without a question. He goes and takes his child to slaughter him. What is the difference in the two situations? The answer is that the prophet has to know how God is relating to him at that moment. Sometimes God relates to you as a command. Like for us, the mitzvahs, the commandments. Whether we understand the reason or we don't understand the reason, we must obey God. But sometimes God speaks to us that we have the right to understand, we have the right to question. The Navi has to know that the situation that he's in. He's in the situation of Abraham, where God commanded him to slaughter his child, and he has to do it without question. But he saw by Sodom, and you also see from the introduction, he says, how could I destroy Sodom and not tell Abraham? Because he wasn't asking Abraham, but he wanted Abraham to understand his idea of justice, what the idea of justice is. And so therefore Abraham had the right to argue with him until he had clear the idea of God's justice and why he was destroying Sodom. Okay? So that's the difference of when you're allowed. The same thing when you approach Torah. When it's time to do halacha, you're obligated to do it whether you understand it or not. When you're in class and discussing the ideas, it's not a matter of doing the halacha, But it's understanding the halacha, then you have the right to question it from every different angle. Why should you keep it or why should you do it? These type of questions become legitimate in a discussion type, because that's the situation where you have the right to understand the reason. But whether you understand the reason or don't understand the reason, you are obligated to do the command. We are doing verse 12, and according to Rashi, the verse is answering the two questions that we asked before. So the first question was that who am I that I should go to Paro? Okay? So Rashi says that you are not going on your mission. If you were going on your own mission, or I was sending you on a mission and you're in the laws of nature, so then yes, then you could be in problem. Then you could ask the question, you'd be in trouble. But you are going on my mission. Once you go on my mission, you have a different relationship to the physical world, where God protects you insofar as your mission is concerned. God will protect you and not let any harm happen to you. I'd like to give two examples from two different angles. One example is where Eliyahu, Elijah, came before his worst enemies. He went on Mount Carmel, and he came in front of his worst enemies, and God sent him on a mission, and he was not afraid of his enemies. Right after that, there was a queen whose name was Jezebel, or in Hebrew, Izebel. She put out a contract on Eliyahu's life. And Eliyahu says, I better run away to the other country, to Yehuda. She was queen. And so the thing is, when he was under God's mission, he could stand in front of his worst enemies and God would protect him. As soon as the mission is over, then he's in the laws of nature and he has to act in a totally different way, and he has to protect himself. When his life is in danger, he has to run away. He has to escape from the danger. This was Elijah. Okay? The second case, when Moshe was sent, we're going to come to where Moshe was obligated to circumcise his son. And he made a mistake in his evaluation, and he held that the mission to go down to Egypt comes prior to the circumcision. And there he made a mistake, and he was nearly killed. God nearly killed him. Why? Because God would protect him in the mission. But over there, he was violating a command of God, which had nothing to do with the mission. It had to do with circumcision. So therefore, God will protect you insofar as the mission is concerned. But outside the mission, you can be harmed. The question is that there's a general rule that you have to be circumcised. There was a particular command that to save the Jews. Okay? So Chaim is asking, shouldn't the particular, what God commands you in particular, shouldn't that override the general command of circumcision? That is the question. Okay? The answer is that it makes no difference whether it's a general or particular. You have two commands of God. It's no difference, like you have a command that you're not allowed to violate the Sabbath, and you must save your life. What if you have to save your life by violating the Sabbath? That becomes a legal question. It's a legal question, which one overrides. Okay? He had two commandments in front of him. One was the command of saving Klal Yisrael, saving Israel, and the other is the command of circumcision. Two equal, right? Now, he could have known the answer. If he couldn't have known the answer, he can't be held responsible. But Moshe could have answered the question. Okay? And since he answered it incorrectly, So there must have been some powerful emotion affecting him, which made him make a mistake, and therefore he deserves the punishment. Okay? We're now going to answer the second Rashi, the second question that Moshe asked, and the question was, the second question was, what is the merit of Israel that they should leave Egypt? Okay? So Rashi says the answer is that they're going to receive the Torah on this mountain after they leave Egypt. They're going to receive the Torah. So the question is, Rashi never answered the question because he said, what's the merit? That they should get there, that they should receive the Torah. And all God says is that they're going to receive the Torah. He didn't say what the merit of the nation of Israel is. The answer is that what God is telling Moshe is saying that the Jews don't deserve, that inherently the Jews don't deserve to be set free. And God is agreeing with them that insofar as their own worthiness, they do not deserve, there's no worth, there's no worthiness, and there's no reason to set them free. They don't deserve to be free. Okay? What God is telling Moshe is that the nation of Israel has to be investigated and looked at in a totally different way than the other nations. All other nations, if God is going to save them, it's going to have to be on their merit. A certain lifestyle of cohesiveness and working together as a society, then God could help them. Something is going to go wrong, so God could help them. But insofar as the nation of Israel is concerned, even if they are not worthy, God will keep them in existence and try to help them get out of their cause, their traits that is destroying them, and because of these traits they should not be helped. God will help them pull out of these traits to help them to be worthy of living, because their purpose is Mount Sinai. In other words, they will come to Mount Sinai and they will represent God. And because they're representative of God, you see, that they were designated as the representative of God, so therefore God will save them because of that designation. Okay? Even though they're not worthy of saving, God will still save them and try to pull them out of their unworthiness or lack of merit so that they should be saved. But other nations, God only judges them based on who they are at the time. The question is, what is their character traits that made them unworthy? Okay? As a civilization, to be successful, there has to be a certain amount of cohesiveness. And if they work together with cohesiveness, so then they're worthy to be saved. It's unjust to enslave them and to break them. In other words, you should try to help these people out. But if there's no cohesiveness, and that's what Moshe saw when we said this already, that when Moshe saw that he tried to help them, and they condemned him for helping them because he was telling them how to live a life. So he saw these people are just living in a self, just the immediate self needs and their own value, you know what I mean? They can't work as a unit. There's no cohesiveness there. So once there's no cohesiveness, then they don't deserve to be helped, because even if you help them, they'll self-destruct anyway. So why not bother? You see? We're doing verses 13 and 14, chapter 3. first thing is that Moshe asks him, when they'll say to me, what is his name? What should I say to them? I mean, why did you say his name is God? I mean, what do you mean, what is his name? The answer is that a God relates to us. We don't know who God is. So we have to know God in self. In other words, the nation will ask, who is this God? How does he relate to us? So the first answer he says, I will be that I will be. What does that mean? So Rashi explains that just like I'm with you in this trouble, there will be future problems. There'll be other generations and other kingdoms that will subdue and subjugate you and try to enslave you or destroy you and harm you. And God will be with you there. Meaning this, that when a person is totally being destroyed, he's being broken, so it becomes like no hope. Once a person gives up hope, that's a catastrophe. That's very bad. There's nothing to keep him going. But if you know it was prophesied to begin with, which means that God is telling you now that any type of subjugation you're in, God is with you. God is aware of what's happening, and it's all part of God's plan, so then it becomes easier to take, because you recognize that it's part of God's plan. The question is that if you know it's part of God's plan, so then it seems to be that would make it worse. That's the question. Okay, that if it's part of God's plan, that if you know God is out to get you, so then it should make things worse, right? Okay, when we say that it's God's will, we have an understanding. It's not just knowing it's God's will, but I understand that everything God does is just and is correct and is beneficial for the human beings and the human race. Okay? Once you know that idea, then you accept. Then it's easier to accept. You must have that idea. If you don't have that idea, then you're right. It could be worse. Okay? But once you have the idea that God is good for you, and God could only do that which is beneficial, and he's just, and he's kind. So therefore, when he does this, somehow, it is a benefit. Okay? And there are other times where we discuss the benefit of God's punishment. Okay? So therefore, as you learn through Chumash and learn the different places, the benefit of God's punishment, and you see that God's punishment, how he punishes, and how it's a good for you, so then even though you don't know the particular how it's good in this case, but you're able to accept that it's based on God's wisdom and God's kindness and God's justice. So therefore, you're able to accept and say, yes, I understand this. It becomes like a doctor. You know that the doctor might do something to hurt you now, but you know that it's a benefit, so you're willing to accept that which the doctor does. It must be that recognition of God that will pull you through catastrophic situations. In other words, let's say the doctor dentist is drilling your teeth, right? If you don't know the benefits of it and you feel it's pure pain, you hate the guy. But if you recognize that it's to save your teeth in the long run and it will benefit you, so you realize the pain and you realize that and it hurts, but you realize the doctor is doing something good for you. That's how you have to find throughout Torah, as it talks about how God punishes, to see the benefit so that when a catastrophe occurs, then you could see the benefit of how God helps. So Moshe says to God, part of the verse, part of Rashi, the way Rashi, why it says God said to Moshe that you should say, I am that I am, I will be that I will be. And then it says, God said, so should you tell the children of Israel, I will be that will send me, that Moshe would say to them, that sent me to you. Now what made God change? First he said, I will be that I will be. Now he says, I will be who sent me. Moshe would say, I will be who sent, it is I will be who sent me to you. Why did God change? So Rashi says that Moshe said to God, they're in such a catastrophe. What am I going to tell them? Their descendants are going to be another catastrophe. It's, I have to, you know what I mean? That would really kill them. So Moshe said that I shouldn't say that. I should just tell them that God is with you, that just now it's part of your plan. In other words, and not tell them about the future. Because if I tell them about the future, that might break them. It's enough to tell them just to deal with this particular difficulty and not to tell them that God will help you in other difficulties. It's enough to deal with this difficulty. And God agreed with the Moshe. God agreed with Moshe. And he told them that, yes, I'll only mention that I'll be with them in this catastrophe. The question is why didn't God see the same problem that Moshe saw? And why didn't he answer immediately, I will be with you in this difficulty? And I mentioned God could have knew what Moshe was going to ask. The answer is that God relates to us in our framework, not in his framework. So he says the truth. This is the truth. I will be with the nation of Israel through all their catastrophes that will happen. It's part of God's plan, and God is with them. That's what you have to know. Okay, that is the truth. Then, when Moshe asked the question, which was the correct question, so then God takes it to the next step. Because God is relating to Moshe in Moshe's framework, not in God's framework. He doesn't skip steps. So he takes it one step at a time. The truth is, I will always be with you. In this case, whether I should mention it, no, I shouldn't. I shouldn't mention the future in this case. But he just tells Moshe one step, then Moshe asks the question in Moshe's framework, and God says, yeah, that is the truth. And then we'll go according to what your question is. The question is if Moshe did not ask the question, would God have changed? Based on, would he just have stuck with the general truth? And because Moshe asked, that's why he changed, but otherwise he would not have changed? Or would God have mentioned this and changed it himself? That is the question. At this point, we don't have an answer. The answer will lie that you need more information about how God relates, what's dependent on people. Since God relates to us in our framework, how much is dependent on people that God allows the person to make the decision and where God pulls back, or where God, even if the person doesn't make the decision, God makes the decision anyway, okay? That is the area that you have to know, okay? We are on verse 15, and the Chumash says that God says to Moshe that he says, this is my name forever, and this is how they should mention my name for generations. So Rashi explains that the word Olam, which means forever, is lacking a vav, a letter. Now if you read the word without the vav, it comes from the word Elaim, to be hidden. Okay? So therefore it's saying that the word God's name that's spelled with the yud and the hey and the vav and the hey should not be mentioned. Okay? It should not be read the way it is written. Okay? Now my understanding of what Rashi is saying is that there's a certain idea of God that cannot be understood by most people. Okay? Therefore, when you read God's name, that name as Adonai, you see, so then what you're saying is that I don't understand the name completely. I don't. That's a name I can't understand. That's why in the second part of Rashi, he says, how should you mention it? So he taught him how it should be read, meaning that he taught him how the public should read it so that they can, in a certain way, they can understand it on their level. So he gave it to them a word that they could relate to on their level, but then the essence of the word can only be understood by very few. That's what I think Rashi is saying. We're in chapter 3, verse 16, and he tells them you should go gather the elders of Israel. Okay? So Rashi says, who are the elders? They were appointed to sitting on courts. Meaning the elders here, meaning wise. So Rashi says, maybe you'll ask a question that the word Zakein means old. And God was commanding him to gather all the old people. Okay? That would maybe, in other words, since it's Zakenim, the word Zakein means elder or it means old. So Rashi says, you might ask me, maybe it means old. So Rashi says, that's impossible. Why? Because how would Moshe be able to gather up from 600,000 people to check out a whole nation, all the old people of the old nation? That'd be impossible. How's he going to do such a thing? So Rashi says, therefore, it must be elders. It can't be old people. This is happening, this verse is happening, as God is speaking to Moshe, and God is telling Moshe to take the Zikne Yisrael, either the elders of Israel or the old people of Israel. Now, if it's the old people, God is telling him to take them out. Now, so can God, I mean, not take them out, God is telling him he should speak to them, right? I'm sorry, God said you should speak to them, right? Either to the elders or the old people, right? Now, let's say he really meant the old people. What would be the big deal for Moshe to do it? God is telling him to do it. God will help him. I mean, when it came for Noah to gather in all the animals, God made all the animals come to the ark. Right? So, I mean, God can work it out. So, I mean, what's the big deal? God is telling Moshe to do this. So let God work it out. So what the question is, why? How does Rashi know that it means elders? Maybe it still means old people. In other words, we want to know, how does Rashi know that God meant the elders and not the old people? Since God is commanding him, God would have helped him find the old people. You understand? So maybe God really wanted him to gather the old people and not the elders. In other words, you can't give a reason why God wanted the elders over the old people. First you have to know what God wanted, then I could give a reason. I must have the facts before I could give a reason. So when you give me a reason why it would be better to get the elders over the old people, so that's only after I have the facts. But Rashi is proving why the fact must be the elders and not the old people. Because it'd be impossible for Moshe to accomplish such a task. So he says, okay, fine, it'd be impossible for him, but it's not impossible for God. So he doesn't have proof of the facts. The answer is that Rashi must hold, that when you are given a mission by God, to do a mission, okay, there are certain things that you could rely on God, and there are certain things you must take the responsibility to do it yourself. Okay? So Rashi holds, this is the situation, to gather people. That was something that was Moshe's responsibility to do, and he couldn't rely on God. Therefore, since it's Moshe's responsibility, based on that he holds that it is not the old people, but it had to have been the elders. If you'll ask me on what is Rashi basing this on, or exactly what part of Moshe's prophecy, what part of Moshe's mission is supposed to be controlled by God, and which one is controlled by Moshe, I do not know this from the verse. I don't have any other information, but I'm only deducing, this is as far as I could go with what Rashi is saying, that that it must have been the elders, and Moshe couldn't accomplish to get the old people. That means Moshe must have been responsible for this act. So we see that certain acts Moshe is responsible for, even when he's on a mission of God, and certain things God is responsible for. And the lead, the one that's on the mission, has to know which one God is responsible for and which one he's responsible for. In verse 18, it says, you should come to Paro, to the king of Egypt. And you say to him, the God of the Hebrews. Okay? Now, in the Hebrew, Ivrim should be with one yud. Over here, it's spelled with two yuds. Rashi is bothered. Why is it the extra yud? So Rashi says the extra yud comes to hint at the 10 plagues, and this was in an old Rashi. Rashi had different manuscripts, so this was in an older manuscript. Okay? In other words, it hints already to the 10 plagues. Okay? That they're coming, yes, that they're coming. Okay? Now the question is, if God wanted to know, to tell Paro that the 10 plagues are coming, why didn't God tell Paro openly the 10 plagues are coming? Why, you know what I mean? Why didn't he just tell him? I mean, Paro wouldn't have caught, first of all, it wasn't written. And probably Moshe was speaking in Egyptian to Paro. So it wouldn't show up, you know what I mean, in the yud altogether. It wouldn't, the extra yud is only in Hebrew. He was speaking to the king of Egypt in Egyptian, probably, right? So therefore, the whole thing, that doesn't make sense. Well, I mean, I know that there's going to be 10 plagues. I'll read further the story. Why do they have to hint at the 10 plagues here? Why in this statement? The answer is that Moshe is speaking to a king. And whatever it is, whether he's a wicked king or not, there's a certain diplomacy in which to speak to a king. And God agrees with this. So there must have been some type of hidden threat that Moshe put in a very, very subtle and hidden way to Paro. And he's giving him fair warning that if he doesn't let us go, then it's going to be a plague. But he could not say it openly because he's speaking to a king. There's certain ways of speaking to a king, okay? And you don't speak to, if you notice, even in modern times, the diplomats, certain terms, everybody knows what that term means when they use that term. But they don't say openly what they're saying. Okay, right. So when you speak to a king or a leader, there's a certain way of speaking. So what Rashi is saying, the extra yud is saying that somehow, in a very, very subtle and quiet way, Moshe already warned Paro of the plagues that were going to occur. You understand? That's why, according to Rashi, they wrote the extra yud here to teach us that when Moshe spoke to Paro, he hinted at some type of punishment. Okay, I don't know if he went into the details of the 10 plagues, but he hinted to some type of consequence if he does not allow the Jews to leave. In other words, the Yud was not there. He didn't speak to him in Hebrew. But the thing is, in a very diplomatic way, in a very hidden way, just like the Yud is a hint and a hidden way of telling you about the 10 plagues, it's saying that Moshe, when he spoke to Paro in a very, very hidden and diplomatic way, he told him about the consequences if he doesn't allow the Hebrews to leave.